Information, please. Presented each week at this time by Canada Dry, famous the world over for its fine beverages. Wake up, America. Time to stump the experts. Every week at this time, Canada Dry sets up a board of authorities for you to match wits with. If Mr. Fadiman will permit me to end my sentence with a preposition, here's how we work it. You may submit from 1 to 3 original questions per letter. If your question is used, you receive $5 and $10 additional if it stumps the board. So you may win $15 in all. Don't get too hot or bothered if our editorial staff changes or edits your question slightly. All questions become the property of Information Please. Letters with questions are to be addressed to Canada Dry, 1 Pershing Square, New York City. And now may I present our master of ceremonies, Mr. Clifton Fadiman, literary critic of the New Yorker magazine. Mr. Fadiman.
Thank you, Mr. Cross. Ladies and gentlemen, Information Please offers itself each week as an unrehearsed program of unpremeditated fun and knowledge. Our board of experts this evening includes the amazing one-man, five-foot shelf, Mr. John Sheeran, the famous versifier and columnist of the New York Post, Franklin C. Adams, that expert on Broadway, the well-known author and playwright, Russell Krauss, and finally, a newcomer to this program, author of that very funny book, A Pearl in Every Oyster, the renowned humorist, Frank Sullivan. Now, Mr. Sullivan, you don't have to be funny tonight if you're saving it for your book. If our board should muff a question, and it will, $10 is paid out of Canada Dry's cash register, and that goes to the lucky question. Now, gentlemen, if you're all set, we'll have a question that works in with the season. This is St. Valentine's Day. And in accordance with the general hearts and flowers atmosphere that seems to be prevailing, we present this question from Mr. Charles Marshall of Boston. I have 3 Valentines before me. Who is the lady addressed in each of the following 3 Valentines? Here we go. 1. You used to be a faithful wife until an apple changed your life. Your husband, then, you did embarrass when first you caught a glimpse of Paris. Mr. Sullivan.
Helen.
Yes, so where'd she hail from?
Troy.
Helen of Troy. That would be quite correct. Paris, of course, was the name of her love. Now, what can you do with this? As the greatest double-crosser, your fame is still not dimming. You ran a famous strip joint where your boyfriend got a trimming. Mr. Krauss.
Delilah.
Delilah, yes. And who was the boyfriend who got the trim?
Sam.
Yeah, Sam. We call him Sam on this program. All right, third and last. This is an easy one just to get you boys started. Many tried to take your part, but only one prevailed. An English girl succeeded where her Yankee cousins failed. An English girl succeeded. Miss Kieran.
The girl who's going to play Scarlett O'Hara, but I can't think of her name.
Let's see if we can get the rest of it. Mr. Sullivan.
Vivian Lee?
Vivian Lee, yes. The English actress is going to play the part of Scarlett O'Hara. It was a very great relief it is, too, to have that Scarlet Fever over. That's right. All right. 3 out of 3, just to get you started. The next one from Mrs. Ethel W. O'Connor of Brooklyn, New York. What did each of the following fictional characters live to regret? There are 5 of them, and I think I'm going to ask you to get 5 out of 5. What did King Lear live to regret? Mr. Kieran.
His overkindness to his daughters.
Yes, he lived to regret dividing his kingdom among his daughters, or at least between the 2 of them who later betrayed him. 2. Ethan Frome. What did Ethan Frome live to regret? Mr. Adams?
Tobogganing.
He didn't. Well, that is not entirely right, Mr. Adams. Not entirely right. Mr. Clark
is married, wasn't he?
Oh, well, he lived regretting that practically all his life. But I mean the latter part of his life. He lived to regret something connected with tobogganing, Mr. Adams. You remember that in Ethan Frome? Yes, Mr. Kieran, you have.
I think he was regretted that he wasn't killed.
Ah, that's quite right. You remember that he and Mattie, wasn't it, the heroine of Ethan Frome, tried to commit suicide by going down the toboggan slide and didn't succeed in doing it. Can't give you more than half credit on that, Mr. Adams. Do you mind?
No, he's now in Abe Lincoln of Illinois, though.
Who? What? Who was that?
Raymond Massey.
Raymond Massey? Well, that helps me an awful lot.
He played Ethan Frome.
Oh, he played Ethan Frome, yes. It's nice of you to give me all this extra information, but I still can give you only 50% on the question.
Art three. Philip Nolan. What did Philip Nolan live to regret? Mr. Sullivan.
The man without a country.
Yes,
he lived to regret the insult to the American flag.
You bet he did. He regretted saying that he hoped never to hear of the United States again. For Lord Jim. Lord Jim. Mr. Sheriff.
That's a regret that he ever got on the ship.
More specifically.
Well, he was just a malingerer all the way on the trip.
He regretted not staying with his ship when it was in danger. It was, he gave an exhibition of cowardice, which he lived to regret
that's
all his life.
I
give you half credit on that. Rip Van Winkle. What did Rip Van Winkle live to regret? Raise hands, gentlemen, if you know. Oh, I think we all ought to know that, Mr. Krause.
That he woke up.
No, I don't think so. Well, maybe. Well, there's no way of telling. It's very difficult to
tell me.
This late day. Oh, you know Rip, do you? Mr. Adams.
Regretted drinking.
Yes, he regretted taking a drink from the flagon that the little dwarf up there in the Catskill Mountains offered him. Well, I think give you about half credit on that, and I'm afraid that means that Canada Dry is down $10 going to Mrs. Ethel O'Connor. See what you can do with this one. Miss Juliet Hawkins of Ontario, Canada, wants to know, of what internationally famous murder case was Frederick Parmenter, P-A-R-M-E-N-T-E-R, a victim? Of what internationally known famous murder case was Frederick Parmenter a victim? And when I say internationally famous murder case, I mean that. Mr. Krause.
I'll take this as a wild guess.
All right.
If everybody's through.
Go ahead, Mr. Krause.
The Madeline Smith case.
No, it is not only a wild guess, it's a savage one. No. Frederick Parmenter was the paymaster of South Braintree, Massachusetts, who was murdered and for whose death Sacco and Vanzetti were executed. I think that's something that perhaps most of us have forgotten. That's the one name that never comes up in many discussions of the case. Frederick Parmenter. And that's going to cost Canada Dry $10. We're doing pretty well tonight. Who can do with this one? I'm going to ask you to get 3 out of 4 on this. This comes from Alice Fitzsimmons of San Francisco, California. Identify the plays and pictures from the following clues. 1. A sewer worker is ambitious to become a street cleaner. Sounds like a Horatio Alger story, or at least the first step. What play or picture does that recall to your mind? Very famous. Play and picture, as a matter of fact. Don't it, Kieran?
Well,
be correct.
Charlie
now.
Chaplin had a play.
You've already gone too far. Already gone too far, Mr. Kieran. That's wrong. Mr. Krause.
Seventh Heaven.
Seventh Heaven is correct, and Mr. Krause, I should have recognized you first. That's wrong, then. Though Mr. Krause saved the day for us technically. Now, what about this one? A political leader is put on the spot, and his young pal stirs up the mob to avenge him. Very famous play indeed. I'll give you a tiny, tiny hint. Practically everybody listening to this program has read that play in school. Mr. Sullivan.
Julius Caesar.
Julius Caesar is quite correct. And if you don't know the plot, the rest of you, go home and read it to find out. Three householders combine to keep the wolf from the door. Mr. Adams.
Three Little Pigs.
Three Little Pigs is right. Couldn't catch him on that one. And as this is St. Valentine's Day, see if we can get one in about a Valentine. A girl named Sylvia. Gets a Valentine. A girl named Sylvia. Mr. Adams, do you recognize the girl named Sylvia?
And I am made at thy window.
You always give me information which is delightful, but never quite answer the question.
Who is Sylvia?
Yes, but this is no time to ask me questions. It's the other way around.
All in the morning betimes.
Oh, that's all very nice, Mr. Adams, but I'm looking for the name of a play. Name of a play. In which
what?
A girl named Sylvia gets a Valentine. Mr. Kieran.
Well, it's one of Shakespeare's. I'm not quite sure whether it's A Winter's Tale or...
Well, there are 37 altogether. Go ahead.
Begins tomorrow with St. Valentine's.
Oh, there you are.
Two gentlemen of Verona.
Yes, two gentlemen of Verona. But I'm afraid I can't call that quite right because Mr. Adams came in with his poetry quotation. Two Gentlemen of Verona, which may be recognized as a play by Shakespeare, one of the few that's not yet been turned into a musical comedy by Rogers and Hart. Now, that, I think, is going to cost us $10, too. Yes, it is. Lost on first and we lost on the last. That's going to Miss Fitzsimmons of San Francisco, California. Now see if we can get 4 out of 5 on this. This comes from Mr. Paul Hutchinson of Chicago, Illinois. Has to do with great family fortunes. American fortunes in all cases. What great family fortune was founded by the following? One, a ferryman. A ferryman. Mr. Sullivan.
Commodore Vanderbilt.
Commodore Vanderbilt, yes. And did he get the title of Commodore from having run a ferry boat? Never quite. I don't know. And this is no time to go into it. All right, that's one correct. A fur dealer. A fur dealer. Mr. Cutts.
The Astor fortune.
Yes, the famous Astor fortune. That's quite right. Thank you, Mr. Krause. The boys know their fortune. A bobbin boy. B-O-B-B-I-N. A bobbin boy. Perhaps this is the only hard one of the five. A bobbin boy. I'll give you another 2 seconds on that. One,
what
two.
Is a bobbin boy?
Don't ask me. You're always asking me questions, Mr. Adams. This is no time for that. The answer is... I beg pardon, Mr.
Well, if nobody knows, maybe somebody could guess. One of the singers...
No, no, that's a logical guess, but I'm afraid not quite correct. No, the answer is Carnegie, the famous steel master, was originally a bobbin boy. He said so on this white card. You don't believe it, Mr. Adams?
Yes, but what is a bobbin boy?
A bobbin boy is a boy what bobs.
That's very simple.
A bobbin boy.
Bobbin up and down?
Bobbin up and down in a bobbin machine. Oh, it has something to do, I think, with spinning. You know what spinning is, don't you?
Yeah.
Oh, that's as far as I'm going to go with you this evening, Mr. Adams. That's one wrong. A racing driver. What great family fortune was founded by a racing driver? Questions are a bit tough tonight. It's hard even for me to read the answers. A racing driver.
Some automobile driver.
You've got something there, Mr. Sharon.
Yes,
tell me a widow's tale. Mr. Adams.
Henry Ford.
That's quite right. You guess that, Mr. Adams?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Perfectly all right. I think he was associated early in his life. With Barney Oldfield as a racing driver.
He was a professional bike rider first.
He was?
Yes, sir.
Well, he was a racing driver on this card. I'm sorry that we can't get the bike rider in tonight. That was very good, Miss Adams. I like that sort of thing. That's very plucky of you to guess that way. See what you can do with it. A bookkeeper. What great family fortune was founded by a bookkeeper? Now, Mr. Adams, you know what a bookkeeper is, don't you?
A fellow who keeps books.
Quite right. A bookkeeper... Very great family fortune indeed. Mr. Kieran.
John D. Rockefeller.
That's quite right, Mr. Kieran. And Mr. Kieran guessed that one absolute.
Right.
All right, we got 4 out of 5 out of that by thoroughly unethical and dishonest means, as far as I can see. Just got through by the skin of our teeth. The next one comes from Mr. J.C. Hawes of Minneapolis, Minnesota. And this is a rather cute one. I want you to use your wits, all of your wits, all 4 of them. Using only the titles of songs, which may be either old songs or currently popular songs, I want you to write a love letter from a boy to his sweetie. Now, I'll start you. You might begin with the date or the time or something like One Sunday Afternoon. That's a popular song, isn't it, Mr. Adams? One Sunday Afternoon or 3 o'clock in the morning. That would be your date line. Now, I want to continue with the writer's address. The writer's address. That may be anywhere, as long as it's a locality, which is also the name of a song. Which here?
45 minutes from Broadway.
45 minutes from Broadway. Very good. All right. Now the salutation. Mr. Sullivan.
Dearest enemy.
Is that a song?
Sure.
It is a song. Dearest enemy. Mr. Sullivan, how generally fortunate are you with women, roughly speaking, of course?
They all start that way.
They all start this way. Dearest enemy.
Both on the receiving and the other end.
On the other end. Well, I'd like to see the letter that you write at the end of your love affair, if you begin with dearest enemy. All right, there's our salutation. Now, the body of the letter, and that must be a complete sentence. Mr. Adams.
Tell me that you love me, for that's the sweetest story ever told.
Oh, that's a beauty. Tell me that you love me.
Stop.
Not a telegram, just a letter. Tell me that you love me, for that's the sweetest story. I'm going to remember that. For that's the sweetest story ever told. Very handy man, Mr. Adams is. All right. Now we have to have a complimentary close. You all know what a complimentary close is, Mr. Krause.
I love my wife, but oh, you kid.
Oh, Mr. Krause. You call that complimentary? That seems extremely uncomplimentary to me. And finally, we have to get a signature. Now, that would be any kind of signature. Name of some person, perhaps. Or a title of some person. Mr. Turing.
Franklin D. Roosevelt Jones.
Oh, Franklin D. Roosevelt Jones. Very good. Well, now, with the cooperation of Mr. Farley, information police seems to be sending the following letter. One Sunday afternoon, 45 minutes from Broadway. Dearest enemy, tell me that you love me, for that's the sweetest story ever told, at least by Adam. I love my wife, but oh, you kid, Franklin D. Roosevelt Jones. Beautiful letter writing. All right, so far we seem to see that a careful check on the exchequer shows that Canada Dry has lost the princely sum of $30. Now, I suppose let the experts have a breather, which they well deserve, while we hear what Mr. Cross has to say.
Thomas Moore, the well-known poet, once wrote, "The best of fame is a rival's praise." We like this quotation because many people have praised Canada Dry for being able to retain in their ginger ale all the flavor, essence, and aroma of the choicest Jamaica gingers. Gratifying praise, too, because it comes from those who know that the elements of ginger which give flavor and bouquet may easily evaporate and disappear. But a secret process of extraction is employed exclusively by Canada Dry, wherein the delicate essence, flavor, and aroma is literally sealed in. And since in the making of Canada Dry ginger ale, only the finest ginger is used, you can readily see why every precaution is taken that none of its superior qualities be lost. And so as a result of this scientific care at the very beginning of its manufacture, Canada Dry is bound to be one of the finest beverages on the market and well deserves its worldwide popularity and its right to be called the champagne of ginger ale.
Mr. Cross, thank you. The second hand shows that you came through with flying colors at exactly 62 seconds. And now we'll run on to the second half of our program and start things with a question from Mr. C.G. Bittner of this city. Now, I assume that all of you gentlemen have relatives, because there is that careworn look on your faces that I've noticed many times. Now, I'm going to name a number of relatives of fact or fiction, and I'm going to ask you to identify them. Tell me who they are. Now, on my list, I've got a father, an uncle, a widow, a brother, and an aunt. It ought to be enough to provide any family with trouble for a long time. Now, the first one is Father Brown. Father Brown. Mr. Curran.
He is the clerical detective in Gilbert Chesterton's stories.
That's quite correct. The priestly hero of Chesterton's famous detective stories. That's one. Uncle Joe. Uncle Joe. Mr. Curran again.
Well, Uncle Joe Cannon down in the Congress for a long while.
Perfectly right. Yes, about 140 years, as I remember. Very long a speaker of the House of Representatives. Uncle Joe Sedley, also, is a character in Vanity Fair, sometimes spoken of as Uncle Joe.
J-O-S, though.
I beg your pardon?
It's usually spelled J-O-S in Vanity Fair.
And how's it pronounced?
I don't know.
Uncle Josh. Maybe it is. Maybe it is that. You're probably quite right. And see what you can do with the widow. The Widow Cafe. The Widow Cafe. Mr. Sullivan.
Marie Antoinette.
Yes, Marie Antoinette, for a short time only, after Louis XVI is executed. Now known as Norma Shearer, the Widow Cafe. All right. That's 3 out of 5. We have to get 4 out of 5 on this. Brother Jonathan. Brother Jonathan. Mr. Shearer.
Well, it's the time for Uncle Sam.
Yes. How did your term arise? Do you know, Mr. Curran?
Well, it was John Bull. It was the time for England. I don't know exactly how the term arose.
No. Well, I think it was George Washington who called Jonathan Trumbull, who was once the governor of Connecticut, Brother Jonathan. Perhaps he was a long, lean, lanky person. I'm not sure of that. Well, that's 4 out of 5 so far. Fifth and last, Aunt Peachy Sims. Aunt Peachy Sims. Very easy one. Very well-known aunt. One of the best-known of aunts. You boys don't seem to be doing so well on ants this evening. Well, you're safe as far as the $10 is concerned.
The radio character.
Not enough for me. Not enough for me, Mr. Curran. Aunt Peachy Sims is one of the mythical relatives of Bob Burns. That's right. Were you going to say that, Mr. Cross?
I was a little afraid to say it.
Oh, you should never be afraid on this program. Look at how Mr. Adams and Mr. Curran have done by not being afraid.
I told Mr. Curran sub rosa.
Not enough. You know, you have to let us know. The next one from Mr. E.M. Barrett of Miami, Florida. Now, here are some questions based on Gilbert and Sullivan operettas. That's Mr. Adams' department, but we'll let the others in on it.
And you have to answer the questions by quoting from the actual Gilbert and Sullivan text. One, you have to get 3 out of 4 on this. What did the Chancellor do in his court all day? What did the Chancellor, Mr. Adams?
Gave agreeable girls away.
That's very nice. I love that. Very good. And in my court, I sit all day and give agreeable girls away.
Giving agreeable girls.
Is it giving? I have no idea that it was the present participle. Thank you so much, Mr. Adams. In the reign of James II, what was generally reckoned as a very serious crime? By the way, the giving agreeable girls away comes to my Lansky. Now, Mr. Adams, on James II.
To have 2 wives at a time.
Could you give me the exact quotation? I'll let you buy on this, but I'd like to get it exactly. I'll start you. In the reign of James II, it was generally reckoned...
Something of a crime.
As a very serious crime.
To have 2 wives at a time.
I think to marry 2 wives at one time.
Trial by jury.
Trial by jury is a case where you not only have the crime, but the punishment at the same time. Now, the third is, what did the British House of Lords do during the Napoleonic Wars, and how did they do it, Mr. Adams, our Gilbert and Sullivan authority, always on tap?
Nothing in particular, and did it very well.
Why, this is extra, Mr. Adams. I'd expect you to get some singing out of you. That's right. When Wellington thrashed Bonaparte, as any child can tell, the House of Peers throughout the war did nothing in particular and did it very well. And they have stuck to that tradition ever since. True British tenacity. Now, the next and last, to whom could Poobah trace his ancestry? To whom could Poobah trace his ancestry? If you get this more or less right, I'll let it go. Miss Adams.
To a primordial globule.
You got 2 of the words. I think I'll let that go. Let us have another adjective or 2. Adjectives are so cheap, Mr. Adams.
Some kind of protoplasm.
Ah, you've got something there. That's right. To a protoplasmal primordial atomic globule. Poobah traces ancestry. Obviously, you couldn't tell him to go back where he came from. That's very good.
I know Sullivan personally.
Do you? Yeah. I think you know Gilbert and Sullivan from your answers. Now, what can you do with this one? From Gilbert D. Miles of Harmon on Hudson, New York. Name 4 competitive sports which would be impractical without a simple chemical compound. Is that question perfectly clear, Mr. Sullivan?
Swimming.
What chemical compound are you thinking of?
H2O.
Very nice chemical compound. And swimming is one of the 4 competitive sports. We need 3 more, Mr. Jerry.
Hockey, same compound.
Very good, yes. In a state of congelation, of course, Mr. Jerry.
Right.
That's 2. 2 more sports, impossible without H2O. Mr. Sullivan again.
Skiing.
Yes, skiing or sheeing, if you want to be particularly elegant. Yes, impossible, of course, without H2O. That's 3. Another one, Stern.
Water polo.
Yes, well, there are 4. The only other one I can think of is one that we used to practice.
Fishing.
Fishing is good, yes. Fishing. In school, I remember, when I was a kid, we used to have a sport which would have been impossible without H2O. Spitball. Yes, spitball. That's right. All right, what can you do with the following famous lady? No, raise your hands at once, Mr. Adams. This comes from Mary Steenrod of Wheeling, West Virginia. She wants you to identify the following famous lady. You have to get 4 out of 5 on this. The first is Lisa Del Giocondo. Lisa, Mr. Kieran.
That's the portrait in the Louvre called La Gioconda, Mona Lisa.
Mona Lisa, yes. Who painted the portrait?
Oh, gosh.
Mr. Sullivan?
Da Vinci?
Yes, Leonardo da Vinci, the famous Mona Lisa, La Gioconda. She was married to Signor Zamboni del Giocondo, I think. That's the famous portrait, isn't it, of the lady who's been smiling for 400 years.
You call that a smile, I never did.
Well, I think I'd like to call it a smile. The only woman in history.
You're a cad, Kieran.
The boys are fighting again, ladies and gentlemen. Mr. Adams, your sense of gallantry is exaggerated this evening. It really is.
Well, we call it a smile.
We call it a smile, Mr. Adams and I. We're the smile party. Now, the second one, identify, very famous lady, Mrs. Paul Caldwell Wilson. Mrs. Paul Caldwell Wilson. Mr. Sullivan.
Madam Secretary Perkins.
Yes, that's quite right. Madam Secretary Frances Perkins. Now, 3, Madam Otto Goldschmidt. Madam Otto Goldschmidt. That's a toughie. Madam Otto Goldschmidt. We can't come back to it. We have to get it. I'm sorry. The answer is the famous Swedish... Swedish nightingale, Jenny Lind. Her real name was Madame Otto Goldsmith. Probably wouldn't have done quite as well if she had kept it. Jenny Lind, yes. Well, that's one wrong out of five. Four, Rebecca Ralph. Rebecca Ralph, R-O-L-F-E. Rebecca Ralph. Very famous character in American history, Mr. Adams.
Pocahontas.
Pocahontas, yes. How did she get the name of Rebecca Ralph? You know?
I don't know where she got Rebecca, but she married John Ralph.
Yes, she married John Ralph. I think he just gave her Rebecca.
Rebecca is a bolt from the blue to me.
Yes, it's a new one on you.
No, she took Rebecca when she was christened. She was christened a Christian, and she took Rebecca.
Took Rebecca as the name. Yes, that's the question
in the
correct
world
story.
I thought it might be English for Pocahontas.
Rebecca? Oh, I hardly think so. They pronounce words very peculiarly, but not as peculiarly as that. Gladys Smith. Gladys Smith. Mr. Sullivan.
Miss Pickford.
Mary Pickford. Very good for you, Mr. Sullivan. Well, that's four out of five. Just got by. Now, what can we do with this? This comes from Paul Leachy of Minneapolis, Minnesota. I'm going to give you four lines of a poem. And you have to give me the four different sources of each line of the poem. Here's the poem. I sing of arms and the man that sailed the wintry sea. He did not wear his scarlet coat. A mighty man is he. Now we have to pick that apart. Mr. Adams first. The first line, I sing of arms and the man.
The Aeneid.
Yes, Virgil's Aeneid. Want to give us the Latin for it, Mr. Adams?
Arma warumque cano.
You never got any further than that, so I'm going
yes,
to start right there. All right. Almost 9 o'clock. Oh, yeah, now, how about the second that sailed the wintry sea? Miss Curie.
Was the schooner Hesperus?
Yes, from Longfellow's Record of Hesperus. He did not wear his scarlet coat. Mr. Sullivan.
Ballad of Reading Gaol.
That's quite right. By Oscar Wilde. A mighty man is he. Mr. Clark.
The village blacksmith.
Very good. Each one got one, and together they made the four-line poem. I wish we had time for more, but I'm afraid we haven't. We seem to have lost $30, all lost, by the way, in the first part of the program. Now, Mr. Cross, I know you have an important announcement to make.
Tonight, Canada Dry announces a brand new Information Please game. In fact, a second series using entirely different questions from those in the game so many of you have already received. This new game contains four times as many questions as Mr. Fadiman asks the experts during one of our broadcasts. And just as before, it's the Information Please program transferred from the studio to your own home. And you'll be able to play it in your own living room, just as we do here in the studio. And now here are the simple directions for obtaining this new game. All you have to do, beginning tonight, is send us the caps from two bottles of any of Canada Dry's many beverages. Mail your bottle caps with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to Canada Dry, 1 Pershing Square, New York City. If you live in Canada, the address is Canada Dry, Toronto, Ontario. The Information Please game is new, it's different, and it's fun. So send us your dime, your two bottle caps, and your own name and address tonight.
Thanks, Mr. Cross. Now, next week at this time, our lineup will include the three veterans, Mr. Kieran, Mr. Adams, and Mr. Levant. And as our guest of honor, we announce somebody extra special. He's a Phi Beta Kappa Princeton honor graduate. He's a graduate of Columbia Law School. He studied philology at the Sorbonne in Paris. He's familiar with a dozen languages, including Russian, Japanese, and Chinese. Incidentally, in his spare time, he's a catcher for the Boston Red Sox. Ladies and gentlemen, tune in next week if you want to listen to Professor Mo Berg. Now remember, letters with questions ought to be addressed to Information Please, Canada Dry, 1 Pershing Square, New York City.
Canada Dry Ginger Ale, Sparkling Water, Lime Ricky, and Tom Collins Mixer come in convenient-sized bottles for every occasion. These exceptionally fine beverages are kind of your budget, too. For the largest bottle, the family size, costs only 15 cents plus usual deposits. This is Milton Cross saying goodnight for Canada Dry until next Tuesday at this time.